This is the All One Nurse podcast, where we are bridging the gap between the stethoscope and the soul and getting back to the human side of healthcare.
Powered by Riverside.
Did you know that the term diabetes comes from the Greek word siphon, which refers to the excessive urine seen in uncontrolled diabetes? Also, that the word mellitus is Latin for honey or sweet, and it was added when ancient physicians discovered that the urine of people with diabetes was sweet due to the high glucose levels. Now, I don't know how they figured that out, but if you have not already guessed, today we're going to be talking about diabetes mellitus with an awesome guest speaker, Dr. Nakia Sellers. Welcome.
Thank you so much. And thank you so much for inviting me. I'm looking forward to this.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you. And it's an honor to even have you here, especially at a time like this, with it being November and with Thanksgiving right around the corner and Christmas, you know, all that good eating, good food. So,
well, just because November is Diabetes Awareness Month.
Yes, yes. So that is, I'm just excited. And you are very good at what you do. So let's get right into it. For my listeners, let me tell you about Dr. Nakia Sellers. She is a DNP who is board certified as a family nurse practitioner with over 20 years of experience. She is a certified diabetes care and education specialist and has a board certification in advanced diabetes management. She is the owner and operator of Diabetes Care and Wellness Clinic. She has published an article on diabetes and periodontal disease and courses for providers for the American Diabetes Association and other organizations. And currently, Dr. Sellers serves on the advisory group for the Women's Interprofessional Network of the American Diabetes Association. And she has been invited to speak nationally to discuss diabetes management and awareness. So I'm just excited. I think I have the right person here to speak on this topic during a month that helps bring awareness to diabetes. Yes. So welcome again.
Thank you.
Yeah. For my listeners, as always, I ask you to open up your heart to receive this impactful information so that it may resonate with you, even as a new nurse, as an aspiring nurse, as a nursing student, or as a patient who may be listening, because you have experience having being diagnosed with diabetes or hearing the term that you're pre-diabetic. What does that mean? And so I just ask you to open up your heart to receive this information as we dive into Dr. Sellers' professional journey, which we're going to start off with her background story, because a lot of times we need to know where someone came from in order to see where how they got to where they're at, especially in the nursing profession. Then we'll get into her personal insights and her motivation, her challenges, and then we'll get into patient perspective and educational insight, as well as, you know, all that probably just start going in together once we get started. With that, Dr. Sellers, tell us, who are you? What's your origin story?
Well, to be honest, let's start, I guess, like high school. Yep. The reason why I say that is because initially I didn't want to become a nurse. Initially, I thought I was going to be a veterinarian. So that's why I started. So I thought I was going to be a veterinarian. And then I was like, okay, well, wait a minute. You just don't get to play with the cute animals. You know, you have to do all these different things with horses and all that. So I kind of changed my mind in high school. I was like, okay, well, I'm going to go into nursing. So I looked into nursing. Can't really remember why I went into nursing. I just said, well, this is something I want to do. And then years ago, I actually saw an article that was written up about different high school seniors. And in that article, it said that I was going to go and graduate. And then after graduating, become a nurse practitioner. So I guess in the 12th grade, I knew. I just don't remember how I wanted to or who I saw that, you know, because I don't have any family members or anybody who are nurses or anything. So I really don't remember what made me go into nursing, but I'm so glad. I'm so glad I did, because it's such a rewarding field that I definitely love. So I went to Arkansas State undergrad, Arkansas State University. And from there, I graduated in 2002. Seems like it's so long. And then I went back to school and I received my master's degrees from Arkansas State again in 2007. And I practiced for a while. And then I received my Doctor of Nursing Practice degree or doctoral degree from the University of South Alabama in 2023.
Okay.
And so that's kind of my overall, I guess, how I matriculated through college and undergrad and graduate school. But it's beginning of my nursing career.
I also graduated from ASU. It was in 2011 with my bachelorette degree in nursing. But coming out of nursing school initially, what did you start off doing? Did you start off with med-surg? Like, what has that looked like at the bedside?
Got you. So actually, when I was in college, I worked as a nurse extern. And I was on a med-surg floor there. I learned so much. I had some excellent nurses that, you know, showed me the ropes, showed me how to do things, made me think critically as a nurse extern. And then I stayed on that floor. Again, that was a med-surg floor. I think I might have stayed there 2 years. And then there was an opportunity on the nurse manager's on a neuro floor. She had neuro ortho. She wanted me to become a PCC, a patient care coordinator, which is the same thing like assistant nurse manager. And from there, I, you know, learned different things. And again, she took me under her wing. And so that was that, from that moment being under her wing, we developed a great friendship, and she was a mentor in life, nursing, and everything else. And she recently passed in September this year. And
sorry to hear that.
She was turned into a great friend. That's why I always want to give back to nurses and everything too, because she poured into me, and even poured into me later in life. I was on a neuro and ortho floor, and that's where I finished my. I was in school, and I ended up finishing my master's degree. I really did kind of got to get myself together. I didn't mean to talk about Dana that quickly. That soon.
I'm sorry.
But no, it's fine. That's fine. And so I was in school. I was started graduate school, and then I ended up finishing. And so from there, I took a job at a neuro office because one of the neuro physicians, he was like, you know, I think you'll be great because like neuro. It was okay. You know, I did like med surg the best out of all of that. But it was okay, neuro ortho. So I did that. And then he let me go because he had a non-compete clause in his.
Oh, wow.
He left a big organization, started on his own. And that's when I went with him. And then he ended up having to let me go because he was in violation of some things. And so then I went back to Methodist as a hospitalist.
Okay.
Then I went into internal medicine and family practice at another office, and I stayed there for a long time. And probably about five years or so. And I noticed like everybody would send me their diabetes patients. So it was a group of two physicians and three nurse practitioners, and they would say like, "Well, we're sending you these diabetes patients because you're our diabetes person." I'm like, I am. So it really took somebody else telling me that I was good at diabetes.
Okay.
Now, this was maybe 2015 or so, 14 or something like that. So back to my first manager role or whatever, assistant manager, that same nurse, she was then the chief nursing officer for a hospital. And she was like, "Hey, they're about to open a diabetes center here." She was like, "I think you would be great to be over it." Like, me?
Oh,
no,
wow.
I wouldn't, you know. But it's the same person, the same nurse that poured into me years ago. That was like, "I think you should do this."
Oh,
and
wow.
And now I'm a diabetes nurse practitioner.
What's so funny? It's like God was ordering your steps and you didn't even know it.
You know it. And this is what I tell nurses too, younger nurses. Every job that I had or every position, every role that I have been in, I learned something from it. And it's taken me, it's helped me to apply different things in life. Even now, opening my own practice, I can from different things I learned in med surg, different things I learned is being in leadership and in management. So I've taken everything, well, not everything, but you know, I've taken different things from different roles. Mm-hmm. And I think that's so important, especially for any, you know, aspiring nurses or nursing students that may listen to this. It's important to always learn something. And yeah, in our field, as you know, we're always learning, but mm-hmm. we should be, you know.
Yes.
So that's why I always try to tell, you know, the younger nurses, learn something. Keep your mind open. Yeah. Don't just, if somebody's trying to tell you something, don't like, oh my God, like, why is this person, you know, just take it all in. Some might apply to you. Some of the things may not. But there's always an opportunity to learn from everybody.
Yes. I found some nursing students that's, and they're actually like interning around the hospital that I work for. And some may start complaining about their experiences. And I say, you know, or they'll try to tell another nursing student not to go work on a certain unit or not to go. And I'm like, well, first and foremost, everything, you have to see it as an experience. So I'm glad that you said that, that you took something with you from every experience.
Yes.
Because initially, well, I can't say initially, but it appears that a lot of new nurses want to come out of school and want to go straight into the ICUs or the ED. Mm-hmm, and it's nothing wrong with working on med-surg. Mm-hmm. That's a specialty all into itself. Yep. Not something that we expect you to stay there. But take whatever you got to do in your clinicals, take it in as an experience. Mm-hmm. And when you do find someone that wears many hats, who is very open and they will provide constructive criticism in a way that they mean it in love. Yes. Because they want you to be successful and they want you to be safe first and foremost, then cling on to those people and take what you can from them. So I'm glad that you mentioned that. Thank you. Now I got to ask, what were some of your challenges that you faced during your nursing journey?
Okay. So early on when I was a nursing student, and I think this was probably the end. I was getting close to the end of the program when I was in undergrad. I had one instructor that told me, because again, I had already said I wanted to be a nurse practitioner. I knew I wanted to work as an RN after. I wanted to get those skills and everything. But my long-term goal was to be a nurse practitioner. Mm-hmm. And I had an instructor that told me that I would be better suited to be at the bedside on the EMP. Now, let me say this. First and foremost, there's nothing wrong with being at the bedside at all, because sometimes that's where God called us to be. And like, as long as you are there and you are taking care of those patients, there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. But that was not my goal. And so, mind you, I was graduating magna cum laude. I was second in my nursing class at the time.
Come on.
Yeah. But I'm telling you all this to say, she told me that. And so I was hurt, I was crushed, and I really didn't understand it. You know, especially you're young, I'm young, and I'm like, you know, why would she say that? Maybe I'm not good enough or whatever. But I didn't let it faze me, because I knew, especially with those nurses that I had as an extern, like, they helped me, and I knew I was, like, going to be a good nurse. That's what I felt. And so that kind of was a challenge, because sometimes – because I even read an article not too long ago about like bullying in nursing. And I know how sometimes they'll say like nurses, the older nurses eat their young or something like that. So that was kind of my first and maybe only thing I had as with that. Because again, I worked at an extern and then I went and worked on the same floor. So I didn't really have that experience. But that, I think in undergrad, that was a challenge in nursing school. So one thing I would say, you never let anybody else tell you what you shouldn't do or wouldn't be good at. And I, to this day, I don't know her reasoning for that. But at the same time, because I did say where I went to school. So I want to say, even when I went back to school, and I kind of, now that I really think about it, I don't know why I went back to A-State, but I did. And at the same time, I had an amazing instructor, amazing professor, Dr. Gilbert Palmer. Was she there when you were there? I'm not sure. Yeah. Okay, but she was amazing. And everybody didn't want her because they heard she was hard, she was this. But I wanted that because that was a challenge.
Yes.
And so she was very no nonsense, very just this is what we're going to do. And in that same way. Yes. So I think that's why I liked it. Yeah. And so it was a very different contrast, you know, from
experience.
What I had
in yeah. this.
Yes, yes, yes. Yeah. And so, yeah. so that was a challenge. But I think nursing, far as the RN part, was maybe when I became a PCC, I was younger than a lot of people that I was over. So that was a little bit of a challenge. Mm-hmm. And then when I became a nurse practitioner, a challenge is not thinking as a nurse, but thinking more as a provider. So that's like when you're early on in your career, you just have to change your mindset on how you provide care. You still have that compassion. You still have that education that we do as nurses and all that. But it's different because your mind is thinking as a provider. How do I diagnose this patient? What do I need to prescribe this patient and follow up and different things like that? So I think with each role, there was a challenge. However, you just got to be ready to face those challenges on and just be like, come on with it.
Oh man, I'm glad that you shed light on so much, even in the first so many minutes of this episode. I love it because these are real challenges. And I love that you still were able to go back to ASU, get your master's, because it wasn't ASU. It was a person, you know, that said that. It wasn't the whole entity, the whole organization. So that's good that you didn't let that one challenge defeat you and keep you from pursuing your degree, whether it's at the same university or another. And I commend you for that. And I think a lot of people need to hear that because one of my last guests, Dr. Shante Coleman, she had someone told her that, you know, she would never get into nursing school. Ooh. And the same person signed her acceptance letters. I mean, you just never know.
Wow.
So I'm glad that you are able to share that experience on here with us. Now, how do you stay motivated, especially as a provider? And one thing that you touched on, because we do have nursing, like even in when I was coming through nursing school, I had classmates that we had graduated high school together and their goal was to be a nurse practitioner. And you do have other professionals that may frown on, oh, she's so young. But if she's getting the education and actually going in and getting the bedside experience and to further her degree to become a provider, what kept you motivated as you started to transition into that provider role?
Really not sure. I just knew it was something that I wanted to do. I don't know what kept me motivated. I know most of my friends and my family, like even the guys in my family, they always say, but you're so strong, you're so determined, you could, you know, you're so disciplined. And I just look at it as like, it's just something I want to do. I don't even look at it as being disciplined. I don't even look at it as being strong-willed. It's just something that I want to do. And I guess I just do it. So I really don't know what motivated me. I guess I just knew I wanted to do it. I know when I was getting close to graduation, this is so crazy. It's like a material thing. I had a screensaver of a car that I wanted. I still didn't get that car because once I got out of school and all that and got another car, it wasn't that car. But it was a car that I was like, okay, well, I'm going to strive to this. So I don't know if that was it, but it clearly wasn't it. But that was just something that I was like, okay, well, I'm going to get this once I get out of school, and still didn't. But just knowing that this is what I wanted to do.
Mm-hmm. It sounded like you had a made up mind.
I guess so.
Yeah. And sometimes that's all you need, a made up mind, because one thing I've learned about being motivated, motivation will come and go. But consistency is what produces results. And just listening to you, it sounds like you had a made up mind, like, this is what I'm going to do. Yeah. And you just, and going back, you said like you're a person who, hey, you are a person who loves structure. Like you say, no nonsense. So being that type of person alone, I think they do come with a lot of discipline because, you know, I can't do X, Y, Z if I'm trying to accomplish X, X, Y, Z.
Yeah. Yeah. And my mom said, you're so disciplined. You can do this. You can do that. My mom always says that because I'm on her about health choices and all this stuff. And so I guess it's just how you look at it.
See, what you really now getting, and that's probably what make you a good educator, a provider for diabetes management. because it takes some discipline and some ownership. If I had to assume, because I don't have diabetes, so I can't speak for a person with the diagnosis of diabetes. So getting right into diabetes and diabetes management and diabetes care, tell us more about your clinic, your diabetes care and wellness clinic. Okay. And let's just talk all things diabetes.
Okay. So I opened my practice, Diabetes Care and Wellness. It's in West Memphis. I opened the practice in 2022. So we hit the 2-year mark. And so when I initially opened it, I was practicing 2 days a week. And for a few months while I was working at another office. And then I was just like, I can't grow my business by growing someone else's business. Mm. So then in January 2023, I started practicing there 4 days a week. And still, I mean, I'm open 4 days a week. And on that, I have a Thursday that's off and I'm still working because we have to do admin things and all that. So practicing 5 days a week, might as well say, open 4 days and practicing all the days. Let me just say that, because another thing that I've learned with opening a practice or working for yourself, you're never off. You're never off. But I enjoy it. It's the only office, diabetes office, or where you can see a specialist in Crittenden County area. I opened in West Memphis, Arkansas, because there was a need there. So the people that are living in West Memphis either have to travel across the ridge to Tennessee or an hour and a half trip to Jonesboro, either Little Rock. And so that's pretty far for people. So I've always practiced in Tennessee, but there was a need there. My parents live in West Memphis. I actually went to school in Memphis until I was in the 9th grade, and then we moved to West Memphis. And so I graduated from West Memphis High School, so I'm familiar, with the area, familiar with people there and all that. And so it's kind of home. So I wanted to help improve healthcare disparities there. I wanted to increase access to care in that area. And I've been loving it. I have some of my patients from Memphis who travel to my West Memphis office, and some getting new patients in West Memphis. And at our practice, of course, we specialize in diabetes management. We also provide obesity management and chronic disease like high blood pressure, high cholesterol management as well.
Okay. And I learned at the bedside, and I had a doctor give it a certain term, but he was just saying like a triad, a threefold when you have hyperlipidemia, hypertension, and diabetes. Those patients are at higher risk for stroke and heart disease and things of that nature. And so I was like, oh, I never looked at it like that.
Yes, for sure. So that's one thing with diabetes management. When I'm looking at patients, I'm not only looking at their A1C or time in range of blood sugars. I'm looking at their blood pressure. I'm looking at their cholesterol. I'm looking at their kidney function, because we want all those things to be well managed, because we know when your diabetes is above goal, or some may say uncontrolled, that increases the risk of heart attack, stroke. And so if you also have high blood pressure, again, that's causing the vessels and everything to close off. If you have high cholesterol, again, the blood vessels and all that come too thick with plaque and cholesterol buildup. So all those things increases the risk of heart attack, stroke, kidney disease. And then also people with diabetes have higher risk of blindness and periodontal disease. So when I see my patients, I'm like saying, hey, when's your last eye exam? When's your last dental exam? So I'm asking all these things. They're like, well, you want to know all that? Yes, because I want to take care of all the things for you, so we can decrease some of these complications. Not that I can take care of an eye exam or a dental exam. I want to make sure that you're getting those things so you can be well-rounded and overall healthy. So all those things play into diabetes.
Yes, I think that is awesome that you're even, because you can't treat one without making sure that you are addressing the others.
Yes, yes. And one thing I do, I mean, I don't like step over the primary care providers, like whatever they're doing. However, this is something that we need to do together. And so especially if the primary care provider, has referred to me, I'm going to, you know, if the blood pressure still is uncontrolled, I'm going to increase the ARB or whatever medication, or I see the kidney function is failing, I'm going to place them on some kind of medication. Then just send a note, you know, even with nephrologists, like the nephrologist that's in the area, you know, I'll say, hey, I put this patient on XYZ. They don't have any problems with it, but just keeping that line of communication open as well, so we can all work together to make sure our patients are getting to that common goal of being healthier.
Oh man, that speaks volumes in itself, because a lot of times people are kind of just doing their own thing. Mm-hmm. And it's like, how often do you see, like even in the hospital, like nobody's talked to the other person? And it's like, mm-hmm. as a provider and even the nurse, I try to tell the nurses at the bedside, you are like that center of communication. And so it's one thing if you document that you spoke to a physician and he gave you a medication for one thing, but then you didn't tell the but the other specialists don't know that you had to call and get this medication for this issue. So it's like, to make a progress note or a nurse's note sometimes helps give you a seat at the table to let everyone know what was needed for that patient. And me being in a hospital setting, I don't work at the bedside. I work as an educator now, but I still try to help them think about those things and help anticipate the needs of the patient. Uh-huh. And that's what I love about what you're saying about diabetes management. You anticipate their needs and holistically, like I can help you with your diabetes. And one thing I like that you said, instead of saying uncontrolled diabetes, you said above goal. Is that what you said?
Yes. Yeah.
I wanted to make sure I heard you say that again. I love how you didn't give a negative annotation to that in general.
That's why it's so important with diabetes management, because language is important. Once you hear, and I'm assuming once people hear that they have diabetes, they think the worst. Mm-hmm. And not even say I'm assuming. A lot of times they tell me, I'm going to have to get my leg cut off, you know, things like that.
That's it.
You know, I'm going to have to be on insulin. So it's scary. The diabetes comes, especially type 2, comes with a stigma. You cause this to yourself. You know, you have this because you're unhealthy. You have this because you don't eat well. So we need people with diabetes and providers, we need to make sure that we are giving people with diabetes hope, letting them know that you still need to live well. You still want to enjoy your life, but there's certain things. Yeah, of course, you're going to have to modify. You're going to make some changes. But if we all work together and can do it together, stop the stigma that's associated with it. And then it's hard. Anytime that you have a chronic disease, it's hard to try to manage those things. So you don't want to come in saying, oh, you did this or you're bad at this or you ate bad, you know, things like that. You want to take that negative language away. So try not to say uncontrolled. You try to say like if it's even the blood pressure is above goal. Okay. Your diabetes is out of range rather than uncontrolled or so, because it does. It's a lot. It's a lot to hear that word diabetes because you're thinking all the bad things.
Mm-hmm. So for someone who may be just recently diagnosed, or they hear the term you're pre-diabetic.
Mm-hmm.
Because as I was telling a coworker as I was walking out of the hospital this past week, I said, oh, I got my next interview coming up and we're going to talk about diabetes management. Okay. And she was like, yeah, my doctor told me I had that pre. And I said, that you're pre-diabetic? She's like, yeah, you know. And I was like, okay. And so when they hear that term, what can you give light to what pre-diabetic is versus having diabetes?
Okay. So pre-diabetes is when your A1C, and A1C is a blood sugar test that measures your blood glucose levels over a 3-month period. So pre-diabetes, if your A1C is anywhere between 5.7 to 6.4, then your provider may put you in that pre-diabetes range. And so that just means that your blood sugars are higher than they should be, but not that high to where we would say you have type 2 diabetes or so. Because most of the time, if you have pre-diabetes, if you develop diabetes, it's going to be type 2. The difference between type 2 and type 1 is an autoimmune disease. And so it happens when the body attacks itself. The beta cells are no longer producing insulin. Type 2 occurs when there's a lot of different things that goes into type 2. But most things, we tell people the body's not producing enough insulin or it's not working like it should. So with pre-diabetes, your blood sugar levels are somewhat elevated. So there are some things that you can do to try to delay or prevent prevent type 2 diabetes. And if you're overweight or have obesity, the main thing is to lose weight and keep the weight off. So you want to sustain that weight loss that you lose, and that can help decrease the risk of type 2. Also, eating healthier. Not to say you got to have to cut out all carbs, all things. And I don't even tell my people with diabetes that they have to cut out all carbs, because that's nonsense. You have to have carbs to live. But if you have been diagnosed with diabetes, you want to make sure that you're exercising, you're eating healthier. Now, there is some risk factors that we know, like if you have family history, if you're overweight, have obesity, if you're a woman and you've had gestational diabetes, or you have a baby that's over 9 pounds, certain race factors put you at higher risk of diabetes. And sometimes, even if you've done those things, you know, you're eating healthy, sometimes genetics and all that plays a factor and you may develop type 2. But it doesn't mean it's the end of the world. There's some great medications now, great technology. Even from when I was first starting in diabetes management, so much has changed. And even now with the weight loss medications, if you have prediabetes, and hopefully insurance plan will cover like the weight loss medications that can help, you know, decrease insulin resistance and help keep weight off as well. So with prediabetes, it's just mean, hey, I may need to do some things so I can delay or prevent type 2 from occurring.
Okay.
I hope that went a whole lot, so I apologize.
But it was a whole lot, but it was good.
Listen,
it was good.
When I start talking about diabetes, it's just like I just go on.
That was a whole lot. But one thing that we can break down that you, thank you for sharing that, because you basically identified the three types of diabetes. You identified type 1, which again, like you said, is more, it's an autoimmune disease, meaning nobody did anything to cause it. It's the body attacking itself. And we usually see this in younger people. Am I correct?
Yeah, but we're starting to see a lot in adults as well. So it's no longer, that's why it's no longer called juvenile diabetes or child onset diabetes, because we're seeing a lot in type 1 in adults. And then we also have something that's called LADA that you develop later on in life as well. So the three main types, type 1, type 2, and then gestational diabetes.
And I wanted to clarify. Go ahead. You were about to say it.
Gestational diabetes occurs when you're pregnant. So if you have diabetes beforehand, that's not gestational diabetes. That is diabetes while pregnant. Now, if you don't have any diagnosis of diabetes, your healthcare provider may check you. I think it's 24 to 28 weeks screen you for gestational diabetes. And if that's positive, then, you know, you may be treated with medication, may be treated just like with diet, only just depends on those numbers. And now what they're doing is, like, when people are pregnant, they go ahead and screen them, like, early on, not for gestational, but they screen them, they check them to make sure that they don't have diabetes. Because gestational can only be between like 24 and 28 weeks. So if you have it before then, it's probably that you had diabetes that just wasn't diagnosed.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's good. Speaking of, I got some statistics here because I have to bring statistics.
Okay.
Just talking about prevalence of diabetes. According to the CDC, more than 38 million Americans have diabetes, and about 96 million Americans have prediabetes. Mm-hmm. And so I thought that was a lot. And for undiagnosed cases, it says that approximately 8.5 million people with diabetes are undiagnosed. And like you said, some people just don't know they have it. And so I thought that was a lot. And then just looking at the economic costs, it says here that diabetes costs the U.S. healthcare system and employers $327 billion annually, including $237 billion in direct medical costs and $90 billion in reduced productivity. So I'm not here to get into the politics part of it, but sometimes I think people don't understand the impact of something until they know numbers. Like some people are just numbers people. Yeah. And then some people are like, no, just give me other facts. Give me the definition. And they're good with that. And complications of diabetes. Diabetes, like you said, is the leading cause of blindness, kidney failure, heart attacks, stroke, and lower limb amputations. And just going back to just personal experience and hearing patients or family members say, because a lot of times people go by what they what they have experienced through other people or somebody else's experience. That so-and-so had to get his cut off because he was diabetic, you know.
Yeah.
And so a lot of times people are fearful and there's this gloom and doom, like you kind of mentioned, because of what they saw somebody else go through. And so what would you tell someone who is diagnosed with diabetes? And I know, like, we've already talked about the positive, you know, using the correct language, but what would you tell someone, and what would you encourage? Also, how would you encourage new nurses to, or just nurses in general, how can we approach patients who are newly diagnosed?
Okay, that's a good question.
Yeah.
First, you just want to break down the basic things about diabetes. Mm-hmm. You know, I find a lot of times that people may have diabetes for years and they truly don't know what an A1C is. That's why every time that I'm talking, especially if I know it's going to be where the public can see it, I always explain what an A1C is. So do those basic things. Let the patient know about things that they can do on their own to help empower themselves. So, you know, we could tell them about checking their feet, you know, making sure that they're not walking barefoot, just educating them on those things, letting them know what their blood sugar goals or blood sugar level should be, just giving that information, because a lot of times they don't know. And a simple thing also what I found is that sometimes we're getting into the like CGMs, the continuous glucose monitors, but I have found that sometimes people don't even know how to use a blood glucose meter. So as a nurse or as a healthcare provider or whatever, those are just basic, simple things that we need to show patients how to do or what to do. And even like if there is a provider, as far as the nursing aspect, if you're putting a patient on a medication, explain to them how it works. Explain to them the possible side effects. Because like when they know how something works, when they know possibly what to look for, that's going to make sure, hey, well, Dr. Sellers told me this may cause this, and, you know, it may not last long, so I'm going to ride this out. You know, it may only be a few days. And so, but now the few days is over, I feel much better. My blood sugars are much better. So just let them know. I'm a big proponent of educating.
Mm-hmm.
So at our practice, they know, my patients know and my front desk know, your first visit is going to be long because I want to see what you know. I want to see what we need to do. Labs, we're going to talk about diabetes and everything else. So that first visit is always long. And and that's one thing that I love about being in practice for myself, because I can control that. And I think that's very important, because there are a lot of things that you need to know with diabetes. And no, you can't know everything in one visit, and I don't expect them to. But what I want to do is make them feel comfortable enough and then just give them those basic things. Are they going to need to hear it again? Yep.
Yeah.
Because that's how we learn. We didn't learn ABCs in one time. You know, we learned it through hearing it over and over again. But just giving people that opportunity. So I would say to nurses, just take that time and just educate people. Educate your patient.
Yes. And on top of that, I always tell them, when you're educating the patient in general, or if you know, because a lot of times we see this too, there's a delay in discharging someone because as the provider or as the nurse, we kept doing it. Like we were sticking their finger, we were checking their blood glucose. And then on the day of discharge, they don't know how to work this meter. Like you said, it's like, how do you empower them to get comfortable and confident to start sticking themselves with the resources that you know they're going to go home with.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm glad that you said that, like being able to empower them. Like we could even start that if they happen to be hospitalized.
Yeah.
Because a lot of times I feel like they find out during a hospitalization. Yep. Like that's the reason for coming in. And so how do we empower them to be confident to do those things before they actually get discharged?
Yep.
So that's good.
Yeah.
I feel like we're
tell you a story about a patient really quick. I had a patient, their PCP referred them to me. And so she was on the leap, on the continuous glucose monitor. And like her blood sugar still was 300. So I put her on like this insulin therapy. I think she was on insulin therapy because I think her A1C was like 14 or something like that. And so on the CGM, you could just still see, numbers not changing. Mm-hmm. And then, so this was like a first visit. And then on the first visit, I added a GLP-1. And so she got all this stuff. Or no. I didn't add the GLP-1. She was on insulin. She was on GLP-1 already.
Okay.
So I had to come back in. I just increased the dose. So I'm like, okay, well, are you taking it? Are you sure you're taking it? She's telling me she's taking it. So I believe. Mm-hmm. She had to come back in a week. Number still like 350. So wow. I told her, and I'm saying this so hopefully it can help some other nurses, help some other providers. I told her, I said, bring in your medication with you.
Mm-hmm.
I said, show me what you're doing. She never took the cap off the insulin or the GLP-1.
Wow.
She took like the protected cap off, but there's another cap that you have to take off of the needle. She never did that.
Wow.
And so that's why her numbers, because I'm like, you're not taking this insulin. You can't be taking this, you know? So that's why I was like,
wow.
Bring your stuff in, show me what you're doing.
Yeah.
And that was it. So if we just take our time and talk to these patients, don't just brush it off and be like, oh, they're not doing it. They tell me that they're taking the insulin. They're not doing it. You know, they're just telling a tale or whatever. Sometimes we just got to talk to these patients, just see what's going on. Just take
That's
the time.
That's good. Instead of writing her off as non-compliant.
Yes.
She's non-compliant and then throwing another medication on there.
And look, we do success stories for November. She's one of the success stories that's coming up in November.
Yes.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Kudos to her.
Yep.
And to you for even.
Thank you. Yeah, but to her, she had to do the work. But and that's what I tell patients, like, I can't go home with you. So I'm proud of you. You know, they're saying like, oh, you know, you did this, you didn't. No, you got to do the work. I'm just here to help you. You don't want to go home to do it. So, So just sharing it for nurses and providers and all. So
That's good. And I think even with teaching patients, and I've learned a lot just being in my educator role, right? So one thing I've learned is that when you teach patients something, you ask them to show you or tell me what you just heard me say. And then you will realize that is not what I said. You will realize because they're going to go home. Like, even if you have a caregiver in the room and the patient, everybody heard something different.
Yes. Yeah. Oh,
and so they end up right back in the hospital because nobody heard the right thing.
You are absolutely right. Yep.
So it's just amazing. Like, you have to make sure, like, take that time to make sure that patients truly understand what that means for them. Whatever the whatever we're teaching them, whatever they have to learn for themselves, like, make sure they know what it means for them and help them own it. You know, help them own it.
Sure.
I tell them don't try to provide care on the fly. Like, honestly, when you're in that room with that patient, anticipate other things because they may be in with a stroke. But just saying, if they have diabetes, we still have to be mindful of what does their feet look like? What would healing look like if they were to get wounds? Mm-hmm. And so it's like, you have to help them own their own care, you know, depending on how well they're able to rehab if we're talking about a stroke and all. But, you know, it's just like help anticipate those things so that patients don't go home. They get treated for one thing and then come back because they have a wound on their foot. And it's like some stuff we can just prevent. We can prevent while they're in our care. Thank you so much. Thank you. Let me see what my next question is.
Okay.
So with patients with diabetes, what are some common challenges that patients face in managing diabetes? And how can they overcome them?
Okay, so what I hear from patients a lot is, you know, especially with making those lifestyle changes, sometimes with taking multiple medications, especially if you never had any type of conditions or anything like that, or chronic diseases, if you have to start taking medications, you have to remember to take the medications, or if you start on an injectable like insulin or something like that, people knowing that they have diabetes or like they have to be on a mealtime insulin, sometimes they shy away from people knowing that they have diabetes or have to get this injection. But that's why I was saying earlier about the stigma. So we have to get away from that stigma that's associated with it. But the good thing about diabetes management now is that a lot of my patients, this is the patients with type 2, I don't have a whole lot of patients on mealtime insulin anymore because those GLP-1 injectables or even the oral medications have helped people lose weight. They help people control their blood pressure. And so those medications, and some of them even have an indication for preventing cardiac deaths. And I think now they're looking at trying to the possibility of having an indication for kidney disease and everything. So those medications have really been a game changer. And so, like, we could take patients off of, like, insulin. That's what I've done in my practice. You know, this is people with type 2, of course, because people with type 1 have to be on insulin therapy. So that's one of the things. And then also knowing that, okay, well, I'm out with friends. And so, you know, I may can't eat everything that they do. But I always tell people, you can eat just about anything you want. You got to have a little bit of, you know, discipline and just some sense about what you're eating, though. But you don't have to, like, go to an event and just be shunned away or not enjoy things. So that's one thing I always just try to tell my patients. You still can, just like Thanksgiving is coming up, you know, get a small piece of or a small helping, a portion of dressing. You know, try this. If you're still hungry, maybe get more of the turkey, you know, things like that, more protein. Get more of the greens, so or spinach, whatever the green leafy vegetable is, but still enjoy some things. And then, okay, maybe I'm not getting all this macaroni and cheese, but I'm going to get a little portion of it because I want a slice of sweet potato pie. As long as you're drinking your water, you're not drinking your carbs, you know, like your soda, whatever, go ahead and do this. It's still time to enjoy and enjoy life, even if you have diabetes. So I think that's part of the challenges, like the family members holding them hostage, saying you can't do this, you can't do that. And even when family members come in with their patient, with the patient, I try to explain to them too, hey, we all going to work this together. You know, you are a husband and wife, you go walking together. Because, I mean, walking is good for all of us, even if, you know, you don't have diabetes. We all can go walking. It helps our heart and helps keeps weight off and all that. So there's things that, even though it may be a challenge, there's things that you can do as a family and everything as well. So I hope that answered your question.
Yes, that's good. That's good. And some of the things, like you said, that we as family members want to hold our family accountable for is like something that we can all really do together.
Yeah, yeah. And there's nothing wrong with holding accountable. But I think it's when you try to shame or just do overboard. I think we all need to hold each other accountable just in life. But just don't, you know, shame and get them into different things like that.
Yeah, you know you can't have that. You know you're not supposed to be drinking coke.
Right, right.
Yeah, got it. Thank you. Now, as far as educational insights, what kind of training and education is required to become a certified diabetes specialist?
Okay, so that's a good question. I'm so glad that you asked that because I feel like we need more educators, especially certified diabetes care and education specialists, because you do get that educational background, and then you really are able to help patients and you come up with an individualized plan. So it's the National Certification Board for Diabetes Educators that holds the certification. And so to receive the certification, there is a test that you have to take, you know, board certified exam. And there's so many hours that you have to have as providing diabetes education. You can be an RN, you can, I think, a pharmacist. I think anybody with a bachelor's, I believe, are the requirements, but I know you have to have a certain amount of hours as a diabetes education educator. And then you also have to, of course, take the exam. And so I think for me, when I was studying to take the exam, I did courses through the Diabetes Care and Education Specialist organization, because I'm a part of that organization now. So there's classes that I took there. There also, I went to a conference that was provided by Diabetes Education Services. Beverly Tamazian, she's a great diabetes educator. I just love her. And a couple of years ago, I got to meet her, and now we like talk almost all the time on LinkedIn. So I'm like, hey, I know. But anyway, and so she told me she's proud of me. So that was like a moment there.
Yes.
Then who I took her course, and that would really help me, I believe, pass the test, because it's not an easy test. But as long as you're studying for it and all that, you have passion for, you know, this is something that you really want to do. study for it, because like I said, I really think that we need more. And I really feel like becoming a diabetes educator really helped me have like the compassion to provide individualized care. Just look at it, mm-hmm. look at diabetes differently. When I became an educator and started studying. And then for board certification, I know that you have to have a master's degree for that. Okay. And I think pharmacists, anybody that provides care, so pharmacists, NP, MD, PA, can be board certified in advanced diabetes management. But a RD, RN, so can have a certified diabetes education specialist, which is formerly known as a CDE.
Okay. CDE. Mm-hmm. Thanks for shedding light on that. Now, what advice would you give someone that is considering a career that involves diabetes management?
Come on, we need you. That's my advice.
Yeah.
Well, yes. Again, it's just studying, you know, really staying up to date on the current guidelines. Every year, the American Diabetes Association comes up with our standard medical care of diabetes. And so you can stay abreast on the clinical guidelines that the ADA provides, knowing how to, again, provide that person-centered, individualized care for patients, because all patients are not cookie cut. You know, they're not mm-hmm. the same. So you want to look at each patient and see what may work best for them. So if they have heart disease, you might want to put them on a medication that's going to help heart disease, kidney disease, so forth. If they're overweight, mm-hmm. you know, you put them on a medication to help with that. But if you're interested in diabetes, I say go for it. I love it. So I don't know if you can tell from the interview that I love it. Yes. I love what I do. I love helping people. I love when people's A1C are 16 and we can get it down to 6 or so. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they feel better. They are healthier. You know, they're happy with their management. So if you want to do it, I just say do it, you know, because mm-hmm. we need more people. Even when I started out, it's still not a lot of diabetes providers, but it's more than when I started out. So that's a good thing. Mm-hmm. So I say, come on, because the diabetes we know is a pandemic, you know, yeah. It could be an epidemic as well. And so it's not going anywhere, but there's some things that we can do to try to help our patients, you know, mm-hmm. to prevent diabetes. It's a good thing that now they're doing more type 1 screening. There's a big push on type 1 screening, especially with people who have siblings or family members with type 1. So we're trying to do things to help increase awareness about type 1. Then type 2, we're trying to do things to help prevent type 2. So if you're interested, I say come on and jump on board.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. I think we've covered a lot. Covered a lot. I think one thing that I forgot to ask was about resources. What resources for patients who have diabetes? What other resources? Because I know you also have a couple of resources on your website as mm-hmm. well, just like articles, things like that. Mm-hmm. But what resources are made available for patients with diabetes?
So it's so many things are out there now. And so just say if you're on a certain medication, we'll just say like a SGLT2, which may be something like Farxiga or Jardiance or so. A lot of times they have on their websites to where if you're on that medication, you can go become like a part of a plan. They educate you on things, or just like medications like the Ozempic, Mounjaro. They have where you can go scan a QR code and you can become like part of like support groups with that. Even like the CGMs, the continuous glucose monitoring, I know that mm-hmm. there's different apps that you can go on and be a part of that. The American Diabetes Association has different resources for patients, also have cooking recipes and everything that would be good. The Association, Diabetes Care and Education Specialists also has resources for patients, handouts and things as well. And what I will say that people with diabetes, one thing that would be great is to see a diabetes care and education specialist. Mm-hmm. So most of the time, insurance will provide that. They will provide so many visits that you can see an education specialist and a registered dietitian. So you can also get that medical nutrition therapy through your insurance as well. So that's important when you're first diagnosed with diabetes, if you have any changes in your diabetes plan or changes like in your A1C, you can always go see an educator. And so that's going to be very important. That's one of the best resources I could say for anybody that has diabetes.
Thank you. So I got that. If you get diagnosed with diabetes, to ask for a diabetes educator specialist and a dietitian.
Yep. Yes. And insurance should cover that.
Yep. Okay. I'm so glad I asked because I'm trying to think in the mind of someone who may need something. So thank you for sharing that. Yes. Now, as we wrap up this episode, Dr. Sellers, what final thoughts do you have for our listeners?
For our nurses, make sure that you know what you want to do. Don't let anybody tell you that you can't do it. And, you know, with discipline and hard work, and make sure that you are continuing your education as far as attending conferences. If there's any type of certifications that you want to get, you know, go ahead and start studying for those things. If your employer has any like free educational classes, if they pay for you to go back to school, go ahead and jump on those opportunities. And also, I would say to nurses, make sure that you encourage another nurse. Make sure that you, if you see something in somebody, empower them. Let them know, hey, you're doing a great job, that you just never know that you could be helping the next person become the next Beverly Tomazian or whoever. That's one of my good diabetes educated nurses. So you could be helping that person, empowering that person. So believe in yourself and also empower other people. For patients with diabetes, you know, hey, diabetes didn't occur overnight. Your unhealthy lifestyle didn't occur overnight. So those changes won't occur overnight. Give yourself some grace and take each day, one day at a time, and continue to live well.
Awesome. Thank you so much. Sounds good.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I enjoyed
you. Thank you. Thank you. It was my pleasure. It was my pleasure. So how can our listeners connect with you?
Okay. So if you are a patient and you have diabetes or a family member have diabetes, if you want to, you know, come to our office is located at 512 Graham Street in West Memphis, Arkansas, 72301. Our phone number is 870-551-4409. And our website is www.mydcwellness.com. And for any nurses or anybody else, we do have a Facebook. I think it's Diabetes Care and Wellness. I also have a platform called the Diabetes Wellness NP on Instagram and Facebook. So any nurses, especially if you're interested in becoming a diabetes care and education specialist or in diabetes management, feel free to message me or anything. I'll be happy to help.
Yes. And I will also add her contact information on ways that you can connect with Dr. Sellers with the episode as well. And as for me, your host, Nurse Chanel, you can find me on Facebook under All One Nurse. You can find me on Instagram, All One Nurse _ Nurse Chanel, or it just may be All One Nurse _ Chanel. And you can find me on TikTok as All One Nurse. And so until next time, bye.
Bye-bye.